At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Football is back, and right now Bet365 offering a wide range of markets, including first, last or anytime goal scorers. With over 45 million members, it's the world's favourite online betting company. We've got wall-to-wall Premier League football with games being played nearly every day, and with Bet365 Bet Builder you can combine match results, players to score, number of goals and more to create your own personalised bet. And if you can't watch all the games live, with Bet365's Match Live feature, you can follow every moment through graphics and text. A bit like watching teletext for the results when I was a kid. Bet365 is the world's favourite online sports betting company. The app can be downloaded from Google Play and the Apple App Store. Over 18s only, please gamble responsibly. Everybody, and welcome to Pod on the Tyne, your go-to Newcastle United podcast brought to you by The Athletic. My name's Taylor Payne. I'm joined, as ever, by George Culkin. Hi, George.
Hello, 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 hello.
Oh, wow. That's an interesting hello. That's good, though. You all right? You sound chipper.
I'm all right, yeah. I've swapped positions for recording purposes, and I'm actually perched on my own bed. So, I don't know. I feel kind of... it's good. I'm happy.
What are you wearing?
Just a negligee.
Nice. Okay, good. Chris, how are you? Apart from being sick in your mouth at the moment, how are you? Are you all right?
Well, I am being sick in my mouth, and I'm also looking out the window, and I'm slightly concerned because washing is out, and it's now peeing it down, so I haven't done very well.
Oh, Mr. Misery yet again. Oh, there we go.
See, it's lovely blue skies here, Chris. You should have put your washing out at my house.
I live closer to George, though, and you know the miserable weather follows him round. So
that's very
says
true.
Says Mr. Happy.
Exactly, yeah. Well, I'm very happy. We've got a wonderful bumper, fun-filled and interesting fact-packed episode for you today. Coming on later on, we've got Matt Slater, who is our sports news guru. He's written many, many pieces and been involved in many takeover stories over the years. He's going to be coming on and adding a little bit of context to the whole Newcastle United Saudi Arabia takeover Premier League melting pot of nonsense that we are currently trying to work our way through. So listen out for that later on. Of course, as well, at the moment, we've got a 30-day free trial for The Athletic. Make sure you visit www.theathletic.com/NewcastlePod to get your 30-day free trial and access to all the best sports writing in the country. However, let's talk about the West Ham game last night. George, what do you think? 2-2 at the end, a decent performance, a good point, or chance missed?
Oh, I have to say this is like the first one that I kind of lost interest in halfway through. Yeah. And draw was probably a fair result. We saw some, you know, we saw some sort of decent football in the first half in particular. The second half was pretty poor, I thought. Newcastle are scoring goals, which is a nice thing, and it's something that Chris has written about. You know, sort of the contrast, the stark contrast, not to directly before lockdown, because we'd already seen that change of formation that Steve Bruce had done, but certainly, my God, to the start of the season. You know, I think having sort of got to the points total they're on, it's going to be difficult for us to sort of be gripped, I think, by sort of the football that happens next. But, you know, unbeaten, and, you know, it's a decent point, I suppose. The sort of one good thing about this team is that they find a way to react. I mean, it's not necessarily always in the space of the same game, but that's certainly what happened against West Ham, you know. And I suppose, it's almost like we're spoilt, isn't it? I'm getting slightly bored with games. I'm not fearful. which is kind of quite nice. But anyway, Chris was there, so he probably has a better sort of overview of the match.
Yeah, well, someone in the press box yesterday said, because I wasn't obviously there for the cup game, asked if George was the cup goalkeeper like Darlow and I was the Premier League goalkeeper like Dubravka. But I think they've probably got things the wrong way around there. But it was a strange game.
Well, hang on a second. I mean, I am gorgeous like Carl Darlow.
Carl Darlow's a very good-looking man.
I mean, Charlotte would tell you, who's been on this podcast before from True Faith, would tell you that Dubravka's gorgeous as well. So,
Okay. Well, we're both gorgeous.
They both have a lovely head of hair on them as well, which I'm a big fan of.
Yes, I mean, it looks like Carl Darlow uses sort of a sort of tub of lard on his hair every match.
It's like a 1950s cinema kind of icon, isn't he? Like a brill creamed kind of a fighter pilot in a World War II film.
Smoke me a kipper, Freckles. I'll be back for breakfast. Freckles? Freckles. Where did I get Freckles from? Freckles? Smoke me a kipper, Freckles. What? What's happened? What's happened to me? He's also got absolutely beautiful teeth.
Well, you know, that's good.
Have a look out for them.
Just make sure Isaac Hayden doesn't find out about this, George, because he'll be getting jealous.
He's out for the rest of the season, though, isn't he now, probably?
Is that right? Is he done for the... Is that his
that's
race
what Bruce
run, is
suggests,
it?
Is, yeah. He's saying he's that's a shame, isn't hamstring, it? Is what he said.
It is
a shame. I mean, just going to the game in general from yesterday, I thought... Actually, first half I quite enjoyed as a game. Although there wasn't loads of clear-cut chances, I thought it was quite an open match. I thought both teams sort of were probing at various points. And Newcastle's goal, actually, first goal, I thought was an excellent goal. Really, really, really
lovely,
good.
Lovely bit of football, wasn't it? Lovely bit of football.
Joe Linton, nice touch in the middle. Sam Maximan waits for the overlap after getting the ball. And then lovely little through ball to Crafton. Great, great low ball in the centre and Almiron finishes. So, yeah, as George said, they responded well. Second half was a hard watch in general. I just thought was that the game, it looked like, I mean, Newcastle obviously have played so many times, 5 times in 15 days, and they looked lethargic. They looked tired at times. It's funny because there's been a lot of debate about this unbeaten 6-game run or the fact that actually it's only 1 win and 4 at home. Is it so positive? Is it so negative? Well, I think for Newcastle to go unbeaten in 6 Premier League games in general has to be seen as a positive for a start. But it hasn't happened overly frequently in recent years.
As you know, though, Chris, we can't have anything nice without it being just tinged slightly with a bit of shit on the end. Can we? You know what I mean?
Well,
just cannot have anything great, can we? There's got to be a little bit of shittiness added to it.
But I just think
Chris just completely ignoring it.
I don't really know how to respond to that because it's true, but I don't really know how to add to that.
Right,
you
okay.
can't. It's a perfectly presented point. What I will say though, Chris, is and something which I noticed quite a lot recently is Miggy Almiron looks like a different type of player now that he's not shackled to one of the two touchlines, playing in that sort of free role as a number 10 behind the striker. He just looks like the happiest little lad that's ever kicked a ball. He's just never stopped smiling. He's just running around like a Labrador that's been let out of a car after a 4-hour journey.
Yeah, but hang on. He's always been like that. If you kicked him in the bollocks, he'd still smile.
I know, but it's something different about him now that he's moved in the middle of the park. I don't know what it is. He just looks... I don't know. I can't explain it. He just looks so happy. He's like a little bee. He's like a little bee that buzzes around the pitch.
You can't help but like him, can you? That lovely smile, and he just seems to always be buzzing around and just chasing everything. But yeah, I agree. He does look like, and this is part of the, as George mentioned, the piece that I've written, which is on The Athletic at the minute, is sort of looking at how Newcastle have gone from score. It took them 12 games at the start of the season to score their first 10 Premier League goals. I think in the 13 games before lockdown, they scored 8 goals, and they've scored 10 and 4 since. Now, there's a variety of factors behind that. The quality of teams have played, obviously half of the match against Sheffield United nearly was against 10 men, but also I think this change in formation more than anything has certainly liberated those forward players. Sam Maximan looks like he stepped it up a level for a start, but also him and Almiron, as you say, are higher up the pitch. Almiron's in that more central role, but really it's that those three behind the striker just they all roam around and switch positions. Maybe it doesn't come across on TV as much, but yesterday at the game, every 5 minutes or so, you'd look at where the three of them were, and Joe Linton would have switched over at the right and Sam Maximan to the left, and Almiron would drift out, the others would drift in, and obviously Joe Linton was in the centre for the bit of the first goal where he flicks it on. And so that fluidity and just having those three higher at the pitch and having a proper centre-forward up front, someone who, in Dwight Gayle, who actually makes those runs, has that sort of dynamism about him. It is someone to sort of hit and play off. I think it just has made such a difference to them, and now they really do look far more of an attacking threat. They didn't have tons and tons of opportunities yesterday, but they took their chances well, which again, early in the season, they weren't doing. And Almiron was getting into the box for that chance from Kraft, which early in the season, would he have been in that position? I'm not so sure he would have been.
It's interesting, isn't it? That thing where it's been that season where at the start of the season, Bruce comes in, he wants to play a more sort of attacking football. It doesn't work. It's disastrous. It gets to the point of Leicester and that horrible thrashing. But he has the sense at that point. And for someone who's, you know, often criticised for, you know, a lack of quote unquote sort of tactical nous, which I'm afraid has always been very unfair. He had the sense to change it at that point. Well, I don't have any tactical now, so I don't know what I'm 4-4-2 clever by half. I don't know. But he got to that Leicester game and it was like, okay, fine, I can't do this. It's three at the back or five at the back, and we shore it up and we grind out points. And oh my God, was it a grind? It really was.
It was horrible.
It was disgusting. I mean, it was horrific. But they found a way to do it. And going to our pods around that time, it was like sort of, you know, Newcastle United, what the fuck? It was that, you know, they did it. We don't know how they did it. And eventually, whether they got found out or whether it just stopped working, and it was, you know, it was more like a sort of, okay, fine, they're now getting the results that their sort of performance deserve. Again, he had the wit to sort of change it again and try it again. And it's worked so much better. It's worked so much better this time. And again, he deserves credit for that. So do the players. They've, you know, it's been pragmatic in that sense. It's sort of been forced on them at various points. But it's working, and it's such a relief. I mean, I think probably when we stand back from this season, obviously there'll have been that three-month kind of break, which is extraordinary, and for every possible reason it's extraordinary. But we will be remembering, or trying not to remember, the sort of really brutal football. But at least it's ending with a sense of, this is what they can do, or this is what they could do. And if you do put in a, you know, if you do put in a kind of really good or a decent forward, it, not having a go at Gale, but you know what I mean, into this system, then there is something, you know, there's something quite good there. And it, suddenly they do have a few options. And no, it's been very encouraging. I am being harsh when I say that sort of, I mean, I just found the second half against West Ham sort of, you know, a bit dull, but at least it's dull. And they're, I think you said, Chris, in your piece, they had more possession than West Ham again yesterday, didn't they? And, you know, that's now becoming a more familiar pattern, that they're either having as much possession as the opposition or even a little bit more. And they're, that first goal, well, that is just a beautiful goal. I mean, that is a beautiful goal.
Sweeping, wasn't it? It was sweeping.
Yeah, I mean, really lovely. And it is just so good to see Almiron and St. Maximin further up the pitch, causing teams damage as opposed to trying to get Newcastle out of trouble.
Yeah, I thought as the game went on, I thought we started to tire, and I thought West Ham were looking tired as well. I think that probably contributes to what you were saying about the game becoming a little bit dull and a bit pedestrian towards the, in that sort of last third of the game. I thought we started to look, and a couple of players went down injured, and a few people were kind of pulling up with cramp and stuff like that. And it's not a surprise when you consider how many games have been packed into the last 2 weeks, Chris, is it?
Oh, not at all. And I mean, Bruce said on before the game that there was going to be changes, and he's promised that there will be going forward. He's hinted strongly that Alan Saint-Maximin won't start on Wednesday, although he did do that last week as well. But I think we are now getting the point where he's worried that
he needs
it's too many.
He needs a rest.
And if Saint-Maximin comes out of the team, I touch upon this in the piece as well, that's when I do fear for Newcastle a bit in attack, because as good as they have been, as good as the likes of Almiron and others have been, Saint-Maximin's the one who really sparks them in life. And as soon as he went off with about 20-odd minutes to go against West Ham, I thought Newcastle did look largely lifeless in attack. It wasn't the same, they didn't have the same ingenuity. And I mean, at Man City, how many chances are Newcastle going to get? I suppose that's a different question. Is it really the sort of occasion for Alan Saint-Maximin in terms of, if there is going to be a game, maybe you'd say, yeah, we'll rest him for part of that and just bring him on with 20 minutes to go. But it's about, for Newcastle, trying to manage these last few games and see where they can get to. I do worry about motivation levels now for Newcastle, because with fatigue, with injuries, without the likes of Isaac Hayden, if he isn't going to play, I just think he plays such a vital role in that midfield. And against someone like Man City,
yes, Chris,
if you don't have if you don't have Isaac Hayden there making, I mean, there was a passage of play yesterday where he made about five tackles in about 2 or 3 minutes, and just all of them very important to break up play.
That's what he does, isn't it?
Just goes around playing the trademark sliders.
Yeah, just going around being a pain in the arse. He's great. I think he's what I would call, he's what Brian Moore, do you remember Brian Moore, the old commentator on ITV? He's what he would call all action. That's what he is. Not always good action, but just always action.
Yeah.
Great.
Fair enough.
I like him a lot. Oh, ladies and gentlemen, Harry's sponsors, Pod on the Tyne. As a listener to the podcast, you can start shaving with Harry's today by claiming your trial set for £3.95. Support our podcast and get your set delivered to you, including a razor handle, 5-blade cartridge, foaming shave gel, and travel blade cover. And going to harrys.com, Pod on the Tyne, right now, we'll get you that trial pack. That's harrys.com/Pod on the Tyne. How come I have to read these all the time? Why can't we get George to do one of these sometime? George, you're the one who's used these Harry's razors.
My cheeks have never been smoother. I can do that.
Wonderful.
If you want me to do that, I'll just clip that. Here we go. Harry's razors. My cheeks have never been smoother.
George, is it time to now book the open top bus and hire the confetti cannon as mathematical safety has been assured? Is this something we want to be celebrating, or is it a very Newcastle thing to look at that and think, oh, that's good, when really we shouldn't be in these positions, should we?
No, of course not. But I think if we all turn back time, if I could turn back time, I'd go back. Talking of cannons, you said confetti cannon. Cher sat on a cannon for the video of that song, didn't she?
Yes, she did. It was,
I thought you meant Fabian Cher for a second there.
No, the other one.
I was like, I don't remember this.
Excellent. No. In fishnet stockings. Yeah, I remember that.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
That might have been a dream I had. No.
She was wearing that incredibly sort of risque body stocking for that video, wasn't she? But if I could turn back time, in fact, if I could turn back time, perhaps I would be on the set of that video watching Cher in that body stocking. Anyway, if I could turn back time to the start of this season, I think Newcastle, I wouldn't have given my right arm for this, but I think we would all have been saying, great, you know, that's good. Because although, you know, the sort of the Benitez-Bruce debate is so wearisome and boring and dull, there was a trapdoor underneath the club and the team in the summer. And a lot of those issues are still there. Congratulations to me for saying issues correctly. You know, they were there. And we know people have walked away from the club. And there was that feeling of disillusion around the place and it gradually falling apart. And Steve Bruce only having 3 weeks of pre-season. And, you know, as we've then seen, the football that was played and, you know, blah, blah, blah. So it's definitely not time for an open-top bus. But it is right and okay to say that, bearing in mind the circumstances that surrounded the club this time last year, it's a decent achievement and something that we should be happy about, possibly more relieved about than happy, but it could have been a whole lot worse, particularly with the subject that dare not mention its name, although we will be talking about it to Matt Slater in a bit. It was, you know, really important that Newcastle stay in the Premier League this season, and they've done it. And they've done it with a fair bit to spare. And it's just nice to be ending the season not feeling anxious.
Yeah, from a kind of watching it as a fan, you think, well, I'm glad to see us. We go down by a goal twice and both times we come back. Now you would be worried that in the situation we're in, maybe the foot would come off the gas and they wouldn't actually be that bothered about getting back into the game because, you know, what's the point in chasing it now? We've kind of played out the season. We know where we're going to end up pretty much. But I think it's nice to see the team fighting back and showing that spirit that they're still wanting to pick up points. They're still wanting to get higher up the league. And as you know, there's money involved for every Premier League place that you, you know, jump up in the league. And you know, who knows? Even Europa League could be a possibility. It's definitely not a possibility, is it? Depending on the how results go over the next couple of weeks, we've got 6 games left, and Man City obviously on Wednesday is the next one coming up. Watford, Spurs, Brighton, and Liverpool to play as well. Where do you see the points coming there, Chris? I think I can see where the points aren't going to be coming from.
Well, nothing would surprise me with Newcastle. Like yesterday, turned up at the match. It wouldn't have surprised me if they'd won 4-0, lost 4-0, or if it was the 2-2 draw that ended in. It's just, as you say, that the fact that they're four back is great to see. And what is clear from the camp at the moment is that there is this sort of attitude that they want to prove people wrong or have wanted to prove people wrong. Bruce has said it, but also you can tell it was from some of the players that they want to show that there is more to them than has been suggested in a lot of quarters. And I mean, it was actually quite a feisty Bruce post-match press conference yesterday. He was quite short. He was asked about the takeover, and he was quite abrupt in basically saying he was sick of it. And I can't really blame him. I know some people are taking offence at this, but I can't blame him. I mean, what can he say? He's answered the question so many times, and he can't actually say anything about it.
He's got no other info, has he?
And he was quite blunt. And then, as he is, because he's just a nice bloke, he was then apologetic to the guy he was quite blunt to, because the guy hadn't asked a question. He was like, "Oh no, it wasn't aimed at you. It's just I keep getting asked this question." But I think with this Newcastle side, yeah, there is that sort of character and attitude about them that they feel some of the coverage has been overly negative. And when you were asking George before about should the button be got out, the problem I sometimes have with the way that people react to what's happening in Newcastle is that everything has to be placed in context of the situation that they're in. Should Newcastle United be in a relegation battle every season? No, but they're owned by Mike Ashley, have been owned by Mike Ashley for the last 13 years. And so there have been perennially fighting against the drop. And last summer, people go, "Oh, Newcastle spent 80 million or whatever." Yeah, but they signed a £40 million striker who isn't a striker. They lost more than 50% of their goals last summer and didn't replace them, plus Premier League experience with that. There are so many reasons why this season was always going to be a struggle, and why, therefore, do I class it as success what they've done? No, but am I positive about the fact that they've reached this stage earlier than I thought they would? Yes, and I do think that therefore, there needs to be some sort of praise given for that, or at least just accepting that they're in a better position than we all thought. That just because you say that doesn't, and you accept that, doesn't mean that you think that Newcastle should have been in this position to begin with and should be like this under Mike Ashley.
Yeah.
But that is the reality of the situation. I don't understand why that can't be accepted. That is just how they have become under Mike Ashley, unfortunately. And that's why we all want the takeover. That's why there's the myriad reasons why we want this change, because then they can break out of this cycle.
Unusually wise words from Waffles, eh?
Wow, I know. Incredible. George?
Definitive, yes.
Man City on Wednesday night, how do we approach this? If we approach it the way we approached it in the FA Cup, you know, it's going to be a massacre, isn't it? But how do we approach this any differently? How do we get something out of City?
Turn up, lose, come home, go on the next one. Come on, doesn't matter.
Loving the optimism there from George Corkin. Nothing doesn't care anymore. Doesn't matter.
I five at the back has been the way that Newcastle have approached those games. It was horrible in the Cup for lots of different reasons. I can't imagine that it'll change a great deal. But, you know, it'll have to be one of those games where everybody's on. And, I mean, we saw what Southampton did. And, you know, it's possible to do. We've seen that it's possible to do. You'll take a battering, whatever happens. And you just have to hope that sort of everybody's on form and you take your chance. I'm not anticipating that personally, but
give Kevin De Bruyne a chance to win the goal of the month competition.
Potentially. I'd like to see someone try and tackle him, which they didn't do during the FA Cup game. That would be nice.
Yeah, you got a lot of respect during that game, didn't you? I would have loved to have seen someone just go and have a good dig at him, just for, you know, let him know you're there, early doors, that kind of thing. Anyway, we're going to wrap things up a little bit then. We're going to talk to Matt Slater now about that wonderful topic, George's favourite thing in the world, the impending takeover, the Premier League and their role in all of this, Saudi Arabia piracy and all of that lovely stuff. Here we go.
Matt, thank you very much indeed for joining us. Really, what we want to know is a little bit of background about this takeover. I mean, it's been dragging on for so long now. It feels like we've all aged about 90 years. I think you've said in public that, as you know, you've reported on loads of takeovers in the past, that this is the most complicated one you've reported on. Can you explain why, please?
I think it's a few things. I mean, right from the beginning, when I think it was the Wall Street Journal first, revealed that this was you know, in the offing. I think we obviously, you know, you guys knew all about Amanda Staveley and previous efforts she's made to buy the club. But this, you know, let's be honest, it's the Saudi angle, isn't it, that makes this really complicated. I think that came in January-ish. You know, I speak to people that do these deals. I speak to lawyers and mergers and acquisition guys in London and New York. I mean, I'm not going to, you know, pretend I'm like their best friends or anything, but these are the people I sort of, you know, talk to about club purchases and investments and what have you. And right from the beginning, there were things that didn't make sense about this deal. You know, I mean, some of them were just, you know, there's a lot of professional jealousy. You know, there hadn't been a really big takeover of a Premier League club for a while. Obviously, Newcastle had been this sort of kind of, you know, like the next Man City, if that makes sense. This kind of, it's a one club city. They've got good heritage, great fan base, all the things that you guys discuss every week, right? That's all known. And which sleeping giant can we revive? And it was sort of often Leeds United was discussed, Newcastle United, and so on. And, you know, Villa were in play for a bit and they've changed hands a few times. So there was often a lot of conversation about Newcastle United. And then this sort of Saudi angle came along and people were thinking, well, right, that's interesting. I'm surprised that the Saudis, if they're going to kind of enter this space, would go with a project. Again, I'm speaking respectfully here. If money's no object, why don't they buy Man United or someone that's kind of a little bit higher up the pyramid? If truly money's no object, and if this is about, you often hear this in circles when they talk about kind of the Middle East, you know, saving face and all that being really important. If this is all part, another arm in the kind of tussle they're having with Qatar, why take time with Newcastle? You know, that was sort of talked about. I'll be honest, Amanda Staveley has continued to be talked about for the last 3 months. You know, why her? What's she bringing to the table? You know, how many deals has she actually done? We can maybe come back to that in a minute. And I do say professional jealousy, I think, you know, does play a part in some of these conversations. So, you know, people were kind of picking up bits of the story. Oh, that doesn't make sense. And why are they doing that? And why are they doing this? And then as it's sort of gone on, and we've realised, right, Saudi Arabia, they pose dilemmas and challenges to the Premier League's process. And I think we're probably going to spend the next 5 minutes talking about piracy, aren't we? So it's been a combination of people have been like, oh, I don't, things about this deal I don't really understand, and why are the Rubin brothers there, and why would someone give 10% to Staveley? What's she doing there? And, you know, why are the Saudis buying Newcastle, and why now? And to this, what we've been really kind of focused on for the last couple of months, the piracy issue. And I'm sorry, I've been saying this for a while. It is the piracy issue that is holding this up. So maybe we want to get into that.
Yeah, I mean, so that's very helpful as background. I mean, I think everybody has been briefed at various points in the process, but certainly both sides were sort of told when this whole started that they were looking at maybe a 4-week process. Now, we're now, you know, three times that length. Can you explain why that's been drawn out? I mean, obviously we've had coronavirus. I mean, I suppose that's probably the one of the big answers to that question, and also how long it took to kind of get project restart done. But can you, because I think a lot of the feedback we get from Newcastle fans is, oh, this is the Premier League being incompetent, there's some kind of corruption here, that, you know, why are Newcastle being penalised for what's happening in Saudi Arabia in terms of piracy when you can buy a Amazon Fire Stick and, you know, do the same sort of thing here? Now, I know that's very, very simplistic, but if you could sort of educate us on that, that would be very, very helpful.
Yeah, I'll try. I mean, I see these things as well. I do find this whole idea of the Fire Stick argument, I'm sorry, that's nonsense. It's just a total misunderstanding of what BLQ has been and the Saudi government's involvement, and at one end being kind of direct involvement as an allegation to, at the very best, being a blind eye, you know, a blind eye for 3 years. So I think that, you know, that's a strange comparison to make, frankly. So the reason that BLQ be in dispute is so fundamentally challenging and difficult for the Premier League is this. Bein are a fantastic partner of not just Premier League, but lots of British sports, lots of global sports. They, you know, like a lot of things that the Qataris do, they've thrown money at this. They've jumped into this space enthusiastically, and they have spent an awful lot of money on rights. And beIN Sport have grown really fast, and they own pretty much all the premium sports content across the Middle East and North Africa. So they're a serious player. I think they're the third biggest investor in Premier League rights. 3 years ago, Qatar fell out with its partners, with its neighbours. I'm not sure we want to really get into that, do we? Because we know it's a massive diplomatic dispute. And it's got very bitter. It's gone on a long time. It's gone on longer than people thought. And I think some of the other nations are probably now quite keen to move on. But between Saudi and Qatar in particular, UAE to a lesser extent, it's still a very fierce row that doesn't appear to be going away. So pretty soon after Saudi severed ties, a pirate operation popped up called BeOutQ. Everyone understands the play there on beIN, and it's been running for 3 years, and beIN have been very upset about it and have made submissions to all their partners. You know, what are you going to do about this? We're losing money hand over fist. We're going to have to hand some rights back. We're going to have to lay people off. You know, can you please help us? The Premier League did, and that's because the Premier League always do. The Premier League, you know, have built their reputation, their brand, their wealth on the close relationships they have with nearly all, let's be honest, pay TV partners. They opened up a Asia office, their first overseas office, for example, in Singapore a year or so ago, and that was to put boots on the ground in that fight. It was very much about tackling piracy. They shut down people here, you know, they go after pub landlords, they go after dodgy feeds. They even prosecuted someone selling BeOutQ boxes on the Edgware Road last year. And nine times they tried to take legal action, because the way intellectual property theft cases go is if you're going to follow the WTO rules, is you prosecute in the country, in the terrain, in the market where it's happening. Now, this is really when we get to the kind of what did the WTO report mean and what did it find, you know, what were the problems for Saudi Arabia? You know, it said that you are not following the rules. You are not giving people legal recourse. You've got to open up your courts at a minimum. So the Premier League knows that. The Premier League didn't need to be told that. The Premier League, you know, before anyone had mentioned Newcastle United, were annoyed with the Saudis, were annoyed with the Saudi state. That's all been going on for a while. I've seen the emails. I've spoken to people that have said for the last year or so, the Premier League has been lobbying the British government to go have a word with the Saudis, please. Because not only are they pinching the Premier League, they're pinching Wimbledon, they're pinching F1, they're pinching, you name it. FIFA have been onto them, UEFA have been onto them, La Liga, Bundesliga, they don't agree on much, but they kind of agree on piracy. So, you know, Saudi has managed to unite the football world. Now, you then throw Newcastle into the mix. And this is where I do have massive sympathy for Newcastle United fans. I understand the whole backstory with Ashley. I've written about it. I get it. But your potential owner has, at best, been letting someone, and let's, you know, can we just be sensible and mature about this? Do you really think things like this, of this sophisticated, it is probably the most sophisticated piracy operation as well, ever, because beIN have spent a fortune on trying to shut them down, and it just keeps popping up. You just can't kill it. It's like weeds in the garden. Do you really think that kind of goes on in Saudi Arabia, given everything we know about Saudi Arabia? I mean, come on. I mean, just so as I say, at best, Saudi has tolerated this and ignored the football industry, the sports rights industry, asking them to do something about it. Now Saudi Arabia's around the table saying, well, can we buy one of your clubs? So at a time, bear in mind, when we've gone behind closed doors and when TV contracts are more important than ever before, and probably going to be very, very important for the next year, 18 months, who knows, before we are really back in stadiums, really confident to go back. So the TV partners are really important. And you've had one of them who's been asking for help, and the Premier League has given them help. And now here comes Saudi Arabia wanting to buy one of our clubs. Now, the way I've been explaining it to people is there's a win-win here. The Premier League has never had more leverage over Saudi Arabia than it has right now, which is why I keep saying I think the deal will happen. We've gone a long way here. There's an awful lot of face could be lost now if this deal doesn't go through. If Saudi Arabia wants this club, it wants a Premier League club, and it's decided it's picked Newcastle, great. And I'm, you know, I can see it now. You know, there's obviously lots of potential there. Would you please, you know, meet the Premier League halfway? I find this whole the criticism of the Premier League to be a little bit overplayed as well. The Premier League have a rule book. They have you know, a business model. Saudi Arabia have kind of run roughshod over it for a while, but now there's an opportunity to get Saudi Arabia in the tent, and then some wonderful things could flow from that. We could have life breathed back into Newcastle United. We could have a big seven, a big eight. Who knows? We want more clubs. We want more clubs challenging for the title. That's good. That's great for business. I mean, who knows?
I'm going to petition for a statue to be built of you outside St James's Park when it happens. But I did interrupt. I didn't mean to. But no, it does seem that, you know, I've always thought so. Part of my sort of confidence, to use one of the words that has become such a horrible cliche around Newcastle, along with things like red flags and green lights and all that kind of stuff, and imminent and next week, that my confidence has kind of partially flowed from the buyers and their confidence, and that their, you know, their determination to sort of see it through. But the other part of it has been my own very strong belief, when you look at football and you look at the Premier League, a very simple rule of thumb is that money wins. And that's not something I particularly like, but it is, you know, it tends to be a fact when it comes to the Premier League. And I've always thought that finally, ultimately, eventually, money will win. And I suppose I mean Saudi money coming into Newcastle, but also coming into the Premier League, and that there's a way of making that work for everybody.
I think, I agree with you. I just, there are a couple of things that sort of have to happen first. And I worry, if I did have a worry, and it has grown, that kind of Saudi pride is going to get in the way here. The honest director test is much maligned, and rightly so at times. I think the thing that people need to understand about that is football's got the test that football wants. If football wanted a more robust test, you know, a genuinely, you know, rigorous examination of people's bona fides, and more importantly, business plans and putting bonds down and putting money in escrow accounts to fund clubs going forward. Obviously, you know, Wigan's been in the news a lot. If that's the type of test they wanted, they could have it. But they don't want it. The clubs don't want it because they know that it would make their clubs harder to sell. So they, you know, we've got the test that we deserve, or certainly the football deserves. And the Premier League's job is to apply that test. And you know, there's kind of two main bits to the test. One is the sort of the people talk about the tick box exercise, which is, you know, have you been struck off as a director? Can you bring your money here? You know, are you on the sex offenders list? You know, things that, you know, no one reputable is going to fail. And if they would, they wouldn't go for it. You know, it's pretty obvious if you'd make it or not. It's an objective test. That's the whole point. Now, the other half, though, is the bit that often people fall down on. And that's, you know, your business plan. Now, the funny thing about this deal is I think it's the other way around, in that no one's disputing that the Saudis can fund a football club. There are a couple of things that are in the test, though, that they are struggling to answer at the moment. And one is around, have you done anything in your own jurisdiction that would be considered an offence here? Now, this is where we get into that sort of debatable issue around BLQ and how responsible they were for BLQ and public investment fund. Is it really a branch of the Saudi state? I think on that point, it is the sovereign wealth fund of Saudi Arabia. It's run by the Crown Prince. It's run out of his office. So, you know, has there been a prosecution? No, there hasn't been a prosecution. Why hasn't there been a prosecution? Because we know why, because no one could prosecute in Saudi Arabia, and being of Qatar being forced to go through these circular routes and et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, there's sort of stuff there for lawyers to argue about. And the other thing is, have you dealt with the Premier League in good faith? Well, again, we get into a very debatable area there. Has Saudi Arabia dealt with the Premier League in good faith, given everything I said a minute ago? You know, possibly not. I mean, and that's all you need, really, isn't it? You know, possibly not, for a lawyer to sort of get in there and go, oh, we might have an issue here. So these are the things that have held this up. Now, can Saudi fix this? of course they can fix this. Of course they can fix this. And post WTO report, there were some immediate concessions made, weren't there? There was, you know, the announcement of 200 new anti-piracy rules. Suddenly, Arabsat was already turned off at the beginning of the season. So the satellite feed of BLQ was turned off. The IPTV, the streaming version, is still out there, still on the set-top boxes, which is, you can argue, you know, that's the genie's out of the bottle and that's going to be harder to rein in. But fine. I mean, are they actually going after people? Are they impounding boxes? You know, no. Could they? Yes, they could. Could they properly legalize BN again? BN have no legal right to operate in Saudi Arabia. Yes, people are still using Saudi. Yes, I know that because it's all over Twitter. We're talking about tens of twenties of thousands that have just kept up their subscriptions. They've kept up their personal relationship with BN. BN have no legal right to operate in Saudi Arabia. So that's something that the Saudis could do. That would require, though, them kind of admitting that they had been wrong in their dealings with this Qatari company. And that, I think, is something that the Saudis are going to have to, you know, square themselves and get over. Those are sort of concrete measures that we haven't seen yet. That's in the Saudis' gift to do. You know, they just need to change their attitude to BN and follow international IP rules.
Hello, I'm James Richardson, host of the Totally Football Show, now part of the Athletics Podcast Network. We're going to be here following all the action as the 2020 football season reaches its belated conclusion. And if you're an Athletics subscriber, you can now hear exclusive ad-free versions of our show on the Athletic app. And don't worry, if you're not a subscriber, you can still listen to us for free with the occasional word from our sponsor by searching for The Totally Football Show on Apple, Spotify and all the usual podcast places. The Totally Football Show with me, James Richardson, still totally free and now totally ad-free on The Athletic.
Interesting stuff, Chris, huh?
Very interesting, and just shows how complicated this is, and a lot of it goes... I can't even really comprehend all of the ins and outs of it. And
I'll not pretend to have understood all of that.
No.
There was a bit to that where I was just nodding and going, yeah, uh-huh, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, yeah.
And but I mean, it just shows that it goes, and this is, as Matt said himself, and this is where I really do feel for Newcastle fans, that they've sort of all been dragged into this, and as if we're meant to all be experts on things which really have gone on. I mean, obviously, the actual political issues in the Middle East have gone on for generations, but then even this issue with Qatar and Saudi Arabia over piracy has gone on the last 3 years, and suddenly Newcastle United are front and centre of that, and then their whole future is dependent on that. And it's just so frustrating and just shows how complex and this whole situation is.
It is absolutely the most Newcastle United takeover ever, isn't it? Let's be honest, this is the most Newcastle thing that could have happened.
I mean, the thing that I've sort of said, I mean, I know this is like it's counterintuitive, but in some ways we should be reassured. I mean, you've just seen what's happened at sort of Wigan, where they've had a change of ownership, and it's very, very quickly turned sour. I mean, I don't think that this test is the sort of be all and end all, but what you sort of hope for is that it is an absolute sort of detailed, minutely detailed process at the end of it, which there's been all this scrutiny, and you know, that should be a good thing. I mean, that should be a good thing. And it clearly isn't acceptable that that this piracy, you know, problem can sort of exist. And I think we've said before, it's not something that can just be solved by signing something on a bit of paper. There has to be, you know, it has to be a real progress. I mean, I've thought all along that as we go on, you know, this is about the buyer wants to buy, Mike Ashley wants to sell. It's in everybody's interest for this to happen, or certainly the key people for it to happen. And so it's about getting into a position where it can happen. And, you know, I do think that's the sort of the way it's happened. We've used phrases like red flags, no red flags, blah, 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 but yet here we still are. But the point is that there was nothing that stopped the deal from happening from the outset. It's been about working through things. So at the end of it, I still think we get to the point, you know, I'm still convinced we get to the point that it happens, but we just have to sit back. We just have to sit back and wait for that to actually play out. But I thought Matt's fascinating because he works in those arenas that are sort of completely separate from what we do. So no, it was great to have him on.
From the layman's point of view, it was great to have a little bit of context added to this absolutely ridiculously complicated situation, and I hope there's a lot of Newcastle fans out there who don't, who maybe haven't looked into the geopolitics and the piracy side and stuff like that, and maybe now have a bit of a broader understanding of the issues that are at play here. And it's not just a case of the Premier League being corrupt or being incompetent or not wanting us to have nice, shiny things. It's a case of there being a really difficult process that needs to be pushed through, and we need to get this sort of, make sure that it's right. It has to be right, doesn't it? Because there's so many different moving parts to this, and this is why it's taken so long. And I thought Matt gave a really nice summary of all those issues and why it is taking the time it is. Anyway, thank you very much for listening to Pod on the Tyne. It's been fun. Thank you very much for your time, chaps. Waffles, are you all right?
Yes, fine, thank you. It's stopped raining now, so...
Oh, good, you can get your washing, your soggy washing off the line. Yeah. Lovely stuff. George, how are you? Have you got anything nice planned for today, George? Are you just going to sit and stare out of a window with rain running down it?
I'm just going to think about Chris with his sad washing. He's going to have to spin it again. That's why he's really upset about that. Oh, he's going to have to spin his pants. Oh, my pants. I'll have to spin them.
I think I'd quite like to see Chris spin his pants. Anyway, thanks very much for listening. It's been fun. Hopefully we'll speak to you at some point in the near future. Enjoy the City game as much as you can enjoy just, the game against Man City.
Just enjoy you belching halfway through that wrap-up.
I know. Well, it wasn't a belch,
just
actually.
Just enjoy this.
It was a hiccup. I'm going to start again and do that again because that's disgusting. Enjoy the City game on Wednesday as much as you can enjoy your game against Manchester City. Look after yourselves, and with a bit of luck, we'll speak to you soon. This has been Pod on the Tyne, brought to you by The Athletic. And remember, at the moment, we've got a 30-day free trial for all of our listeners if you go to www.athletic.com/NewcastlePod. Look after yourselves, and we'll see you on the other side. Take care. Bye-bye.